We're kicking off the show today with a geopolitics update. Things are heating up in the Middle East. After a period of relative calm, Iran and the US have resumed exchanging fire. This morning, New Zealand time, the US military announced it has destroyed 5 Iranian oil tankers in retaliation for attempted Iranian attacks on a US Navy warship. To Europe, the war in Ukraine grinds on, while Germany has accused Russia of being behind an attempted drone attack at Leipzig Airport, an allegation Moscow strongly denies. And with Russia heading into parliamentary elections later this month, there are growing questions about what Vladimir Putin might do next and whether Europe is preparing for the possibility of a much wider confrontation with Russia. I'm joined by a friend of the show, retired Major General John Howard. He is a former New Zealand Chief of Defence Intelligence and also a former Deputy Director at the US Defence Intelligence Agency in Washington, D.C. Hi, John.
Kia ora.
Okay, now we've got a fair bit to get through, such as the nature of international relations. Let's start with Iran, the Strait of Hormuz. Are things starting to heat up again?
So the way that I'd describe it is that the complexity and volatility is only going to continue. I wouldn't say it's going to decrease, and I think it would be remiss of us to expect that things would be clear by Christmas.
What's going on with the Iranian blockade? Who's currently in control of the strait?
Look, that's a great question. And what we've seen over the last 6 months is the confirmation that the economic pressure is now in the hands of those that can physically control the access in and out of the Gulf. To say that someone's in control, well, that's probably a little bit more complex because we've seen ships being escorted in and out. What we've got is a really complex environment with the Gulf states trying to re-energise the economy and, of course, with the US and their efforts there to try and escort some ships out. It's just really complex on the ground, and it's really hard to see that from New Zealand.
And when we're talking about complexity, we're talking about hour-to-hour complexity, day-to-day complexity?
Yeah, we're talking about a lot of ambiguity and a lot of volatility that has the ability to flare at a moment's notice. So we see strike, counter-strike, and then we see information operations in the broader geopolitical domain as nations are looking for energy security as well as the confidence and assurance that the region will stabilise.
As you pointed out, it's difficult to see or comprehend from New Zealand, but at the same time, we do notice it, for example, when we're at the petrol pump. What are you predicting? What are you sensing? What are you preparing for when it comes to how it impacts us on the ground here in New Zealand?
That's a really good segue to try and lift ourselves and our strategic thinking towards not just today and not just our election that's coming, but what 2027 will look like. And the price of fuel and fuel derivatives at the pump is important, but I'd be thinking about the price of energy. So we're 6 months into this conflict, and it has definitely impacted most New Zealanders, if not all, immediately in their pockets. So not just the price of fuel, but the price of groceries. And you know, the second order effect, of course, is all the byproducts of the petroleum industry. So everything that's wrapped in plastic, including our pharmaceuticals, all of these things are going to have an impact. And that impact will extend well into next year, if not the year after. And the other things I think about is, even if we see a resolution of that conflict at the epicentre of the Straits of Hormuz, the ability to reopen and allow oil and oil products to flow at the levels that we saw only 6 months ago, that's not going to happen for a couple of years. There's a lot of engineering, a lot of certification, and of course, insurance premiums will remain high throughout.
Okay, let's move to Europe, and thank you for recapping there, because it is a lot, isn't it, for us to comprehend,
yeah.
But at the same time, it does have real impacts. Now, in Europe, this week, we've seen Russia resume attacks on Ukraine after a small pause. Tell us about that. There was a small pause while the US envoys Jared Kushner and Steve Witkoff visited the region.
Yeah, so I'd probably start even at a more strategic level in relation to the war in Ukraine. You know, that's since early 2022. So in my mind, there hasn't been a pause. All operations, military, information, diplomatic, and don't forget cyber domain ops here, have been ongoing for that period. There was a window that allowed the US envoy to go in, but I'd go a little bit further back to the unprecedented, but unique visit by the director of the CIA into Moscow. And his travel was out in the public domain. And so there's clearly messaging from both the US and Putin as to what that may or may not mean. My view would be he probably went in with an agenda with three key items, and he went there to talk with Putin about what that would mean. And that then allowed the US envoy in. And of course, from there, we saw the US envoy go into Kiev, which was another positive indication, but we're far from a settlement or even the discussion of peace.
Russia beginning to bombard Kiev soon after the US envoys left, is that a sign that those talks failed?
So as soon as the US envoy had moved out, then I would imagine that the military operations that were already planned would be prosecuted. And by that I mean more bombings, more drones, more assassinations, all of those things that we have seen and shouldn't be surprised about for the last 4.5 years. The bigger issue, of course, in my mind, is what does that mean for Western Europe? And the attack at Leipzig Airport only last month appears to have gone off the radar at home when we start talking about the geopolitical impacts.
Why do you think it's gone off the radar?
So we don't... Okay, let me step back. So I think the attack by what has now been credited as Russian GRU, so military intelligence activists, operators, hasn't been front page news at home. The initial attack was non-attributed. But when you see a drone with military-grade explosives bumping into Ukrainian-flagged aircraft at a military airport in Germany, then there's a real clear signal that there are other seismic events at play. And across Europe, we've seen very clear declaration by leadership around their concerns of Russia trying to test the boundaries of Article 5 of the NATO Charter. That is going to have a big ramification. And I'd imagine that would be part of the deeper discussion if we lived in Western Europe, if we lived in places where most of us have visited and have been comfortable. It's not the world that we would hope it would be.
Can you recap on what Article 5 of the NATO Charter includes?
Yeah, sure. So Article 5 is a very key part of the NATO Charter that talks about an attack on any member is an attack on everybody, and that the NATO apparatus, its military apparatus, diplomatic and information, will come immediately to the aid of the state or party that's been attacked. So it's an assured defence that allows NATO to actually stand united, especially for those smaller nations that may not have the weight or capabilities of the bigger NATO nations.
And just to recap, Russia has denied involvement.
Indeed. So Russia has denied involvement and Putin has said he's looking for evidence. In this case, the German authorities have attributed it to Russia. They won't have done that without significant analytical research and technical review of what they found on the ground. So I'd be very confident that the attribution, as declared by Germany, is in fact something that we should be very aware of and understanding what that means for our own national security.
Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov accusing Germany of moving towards war with Russia. What do you have a view on this?
So this is not unlike what we've seen with the Russian Foreign Minister in a range of engagements for his entire career. He's a very old hand at the political manoeuvring and what we would call grey zone or information operations. To suggest that Germany is positioning itself to have a war with Russia in many areas is beyond belief, especially when we consider the state of their economy and their internal issues, and even with the recent election. I would see, as we have seen in a range of places, ongoing what we call information operations to change the narrative. And some of that narrative is being changed online and not by humans.
How do you view the recent elections with the AFD and the results there? Of course, these being state-level elections in Germany.
Yeah, so the recent state-level outcomes has created what I'd call a seismic shift in fracture lines inside Germany and Western Europe. Everybody is now looking as to what that means for their own elections. And I don't think anyone is surprised when we see a rise of nationalism across the world. Given the geopolitical tension, we can see this in many countries. we can see it closer to home. So from New Zealand, it's really hard to make an immediate assessment, but it's worth watching as to see what that means once it gets to the federal level.
John, just to finish, and great speaking with you, and thank you for this very succinct approach to a lot of topics all at once. Looking at what's happening in the world right now, how concerned should we be, and what do we need to read up or focus on when you're talking about things that we need to develop an awareness about?
Sure.
As New Zealanders, to be clear.
I'm just thinking how I'll answer this. So there's a couple of things I'll start with. So as New Zealanders, we need to be very aware of the geopolitical environment in which we live today. As I've said previously, the world is not what you hope it will be. And we need to understand what that means for our family, for our finances, and for our future. If we can look towards the election as citizens of our free country, and look beyond the 8th of November, because the geopolitical world will not change with a new government. We need to be quite clear-eyed about what that means to us as a trading nation. And we are a trading nation. Over 95% of our exports and imports go by sea. So somehow we need to think about our economic resilience. New Zealand's economic resilience is the foundation of our national security, from the kitchen table to the cabinet table, and we need to be quite clear about how we secure that economic resilience. I applaud the recent agreement in the Cook Islands between the Cooks, New Zealand and America to re-establish an economic port in the Northern Cooks, an area that has perhaps not been at the forefront of our thinking. But the more we can build resilience with our good friends and neighbours, the better we will be to weather what may lie ahead, not just tomorrow, but for the next decade.
And just to finish, John, when it comes to keeping ourselves up to date and understanding that decisions and activities that are happening around the world do have a direct impact on us, how do you keep yourself up to date every day?
Yeah, so let me step back a little bit. So the best way to understand the world is to have your views challenged. And that means talking with those that may have different views, reading what's online, and validating that what you're reading is actually real. In this day and age, it's really hard to get confidence and assurance of the level of analytical effort that may have gone into some of the so-called newsworthy items that we are fed. And not having one source of truth. The words I would use are trust but verify. And when you verify, you go to someone who has a higher degree of professional credibility than perhaps a casual conversation at your local supermarket, as it were. And the other thing we should be doing as citizens is understanding that national security is everybody's business. And that means think about how you view the world and where you see the world for your children going. These are discussions that our grandparents used to have at the kitchen table regularly but have been absent from our daily lives for a generation. If I was sitting at home with my parents, I'd be saying, it's not a time to panic. It's a time to be aware and to look through and past the elections. It's a time for us to think about how do we build resilience the same way we would if we had a natural disaster. And now we live in an age of geopolitical tension, which is only rising. And that doesn't mean that we have to make a binary decision against one superpower or an emerging superpower. It means we need to be clear-eyed about what are our national interests and be comfortable talking about it the same way we're comfortable talking about who's going to beat the South Africans.
And there you have it. Always a pleasure. Thank you very much, John. That was retired Major General John Howard.